on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Halfway through the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this Saturday morning. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Scott Powers. Scott covers the Chicago Blackhawks for The Athletic in Chicago. Scott, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Scott, the Chicago Blackhawks. You know, for the last number of years, the Blackhawks sort of had always gone through the regular season, not at the top of the standings, but certainly a playoff team that was often biding their time before really finding their legs come playoff time. So far this year, that's not the case. 8-0-2 in their last 10, the second best team in the NHL with a 10-3-2 record. Why sort of the change in tactics? Do you think it's anything deliberate that the Blackhawks are sort of putting their foot on the gas early this season, or is it just a happy coincidence that everything is playing out that way?
Well, they're certainly pleased with their start, but it's sort of weird because they're not playing great hockey all the time. I mean, a lot of the numbers indicate, possession-wise, they're actually struggling more than they have in recent years. They're giving up more shots. Corey Crawford's facing a lot more shots. The quality isn't there. A lot of things indicate the Blackhawks probably shouldn't be winning games, but they still are, and they're doing it in a variety of ways. Last night was the third time this season where they pulled their goalie, desperate for a goal, and scored a goal and forced overtime. So they're getting points that way. The penalty kill was a mess early in the year where they gave up 15 goals already this season, and they corrected that, so that's gotten better. But, for one big reason why they're, succeeding right now is Corey Crawford, who's just, he's playing probably the best hockey of his career. He's his save percentage in 5-on-5, something like 976, and he's playing really well right now. And then they're getting some clutch goals, scoring some late goals and scoring goals when they need them. And the fact that they've had a couple of guys step up that didn't expect to. Richard Panik's come through with 7 goals, and Artem Anisimov was a bit of a factor last season with between Kane and Panarin, but he's emerged and he's got 17 points and, had 11 game point streak. And then you got their, they got their studs stepping up. Kane's off to a really good start, and Taves is playing better now after a slow start. And then Marian Hossa is just, after a couple of years where he just couldn't find the net and was really struggling, he seems like he's just rejuvenated. And, last 8 games, he has 7 goals and 3 assists. So, a lot of different factors, but a lot of statistics, and especially the advanced ones, same what the Blackhawks are doing and not sustainable. So I think there's still a lot of areas where this team wants to improve and, want to get better if they want to, have some success later on in the year.
Scott, you mentioned Artemi Panarin there, and we know that he can score goals. He won the Calder Trophy last year as the league's top rookie. He scored an overtime goal on Wednesday night against the St. Louis Blues, but I guess we can add fighter to his resume. Is that something that we can expect, that he's going to be getting into more fights like he did with Scotty Upshaw on Wednesday?
No, I wouldn't expect so. We asked him about it last night, and, he doesn't speak English, so he did through an interpreter, but he said that he'll do it when he has to, but he prefers to just play hockey. Then the question about him was, how much a factor of last season was Kane, where Kane had the amazing season he had and put up all the points, and Panarin benefited from that. But Panarin's proven this year that, he can do it himself. Joel Quenneville separated those two guys, put them on different lines, and Panarin's been just as good. Him and Mary Holson and Anisimov have really, really clicked as well. So that's a good sign, and the Blackhawks are working on a new contract after this year for Panarin, but I think it's a real positive to show that he can play on his own, and the fact that they can separate them and actually create a little bit more balance in the lineup. And strangely enough, it's been Kane and Taves who who haven't exactly clicked together on the line, and it's been that second line of Panarin and Nisimov and Holtz that's been kind of carrying the Blackhawks as of late.
Scott, last season I watched Tyler Mott when he left Michigan, finished there, and came and played with Rockford to end the year in the AHL for Chicago, and now he's adjusted to playing in the NHL. And how is he making that adjustment so far?
Yeah, he's been really good. You know, I think the question about Mott was I think they all knew that he was a really good defensive player, and then last year at Michigan he broke out and had this great offensive season, and he finished second in the country in goals. So it was wondering whether that was a fluke, because I think prior to that he only scored maybe 10 college goals over his first 3 years, and he's shown some offense in the NHL now, and he has 3 goals. Unfortunately for him, he got hurt last week, and he's out for I think 2 or 3 weeks, so they don't have him. But it's been a really good start, and he's one of a number of rookies the Blackhawks have kind of thrust into the lineup just because of the salary cap and stuff like that. So it's been Mott and Ryan Hartman, who I actually think might get bumped up to the top line now after trying to figure out who's going to work with Cannon Taves. And Ryan Hartman, a first-round pick from a year back, it seems like he's the next guy in line. And they tried Nick Schmaltz, a first-round pick a couple of years ago. He was a sophomore at North Dakota last year, and he's made the jump. And they've had a handful of rookies that have stepped up, and not that they're all playing really well, but they're doing what they what they've had to do, and not really costing the Blackhawks game. So I think that's also where the Blackhawks are optimistic, that they feel like a lot of these rookies, younger guys, they have 2 first-year defensemen. A lot of these younger guys can improve and get better, and this team, what they look like now, they can maybe even be a little bit better as the season progresses.
Scott Power is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Scott covers the Chicago Blackhawks for The Athletic in Chicago. Scott, you mentioned the penalty kill and that it's been better as of late, and it has. They've only given up 1 goal against in the last 6 games, so 16 out of 17 in the last in penalty killing opportunities for the Blackhawks since the start of November. Why was it so bad in October, though, and it's still at the bottom of the NHL? So that just goes to show you just how terrible it was, in that it's been pretty decent in November, but it was that bad in October.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything like it, what it was in October. It was just, game after game, they were giving them multiple power play goals, and a lot of them was just systematic issues with not getting in lane, not blocking shots. The rotation was bad, and then I think confidence was there too. It's just every time they got on the ice, they seemed to give up a goal. So they put a lot of time in the video and studying it, and they've had the same assistant coach, Mike Kitchen, run it for a long time now. So I think the familiarity with it and going over it, eventually they figure it out. They do have a lot of guys back on the penalty kill, Marcus Kruger and Olsa and Taves, and the defense with Seabrook and Keith. So you had guys who had been successful at it before, so you kind of figure it was just a matter of time. It improved, but it's kind of flipped the other way, where it was so bad early on, and now it's improved, and it's been one of the better reasons why they're winning games again and getting points, because they're keeping teams off of the off the board, off the power play. But yeah, it was horrid, and I think it was really kind of Quinville wasn't sure what was going on there, and it was really cause for frustration. But as of late, it really has come on too.
Scott, the Blackhawks signed Jordan Tootoo in the offseason after spending the last couple of years with the Devils. And, he's played in all 15 games for the Chicago Blackhawks. He doesn't have any points yet this year. But, the fact that he's been in all 15 games, does that show you what Joel Quenneville thinks of him and the role that he can play on this team?
Yeah, I think everyone was questionable what Jordan Tootoo is going to bring to this team, aside from what he's kind of known for. Fighting and that sort of thing, and his possession numbers have never been great, and surprisingly he's fitted really well. He's not playing a whole lot. I mean, there's games where he plays 5-6 minutes, sometimes 7-8, but he's possession numbers have been really good. I don't think he's been on the ice for a 5-on-5 goal yet this season against he's not producing, but they're getting the puck in the offensive zone and getting out of the defensive zone, and he hasn't been a liability, and he seems to. He's even last night he had a couple chances to score, and he's been better than I think a lot of people expected, and and they're still asking him to be that guy that if if something happens, he's the one that kind of steps up and, you know, defends his teammates. And Quinville's kind of the old-school coach that sort of lights at things. But, yeah, overall, he's been a lot better than a lot of people thought. And he's filled that role. And, you know, Quinville doesn't push his minutes, so it's kind of limited to that, you know, that 5 to 10 range. And, yeah, he's been better than people expected him coming in to be.
Scott, one player who's, in my mind, just unbelievable is Marian Hossa, and it just seems like he keeps getting better and better, even though he's 37 years old. Tied the game yesterday with 22.3 seconds to go. What can be said about Marian Hossa?
Yeah, no, he's really been rejuvenated. It's, you know, last couple of years, you still have that defensive side of the game, and you still have that where he's still good at back checking and, you know, what he does in the neutral zone and the defensive zone. And But this year, offensively, he's come on again. Last few years, you know, his shooting percentage dropped, his goal production dropped. He, you know, really struggled to get the puck in the net last year. And he was hopeful, and I think the Blackhawks are hopeful, that the one benefit of a long offseason losing in the first round was all these guys are going to get, you know, a longer offseason and time to just, you know, get back going. And Hossa, you know, Hossa has been that guy that's really benefited from that. He said he felt good coming into the season. He could really feel the difference of having a longer year to take care of his body and you know, just be healthier. And you know, he looks like he has another step. He looks like he's elevating his shot more, where last year maybe, you know, on opportunities around him that he just wasn't able to get it high enough to, and this year he is. And yeah, it's just, he's been on a roll, and it's been one of the main differences, because, you know, with the salary cap and what the Blackhawks have had to do to get rid of players, and, you know, another offseason of having to get rid of Tara Vinen and, you know, Brian Bickle, who wasn't scoring, but, you know, he was with those financial constraints, they needed their better players to start producing, and the fact that Hulse has been one of them has been it's been a positive for the Blackhawks, and also considering that he still has, you know, a few years left on his contract.
Scott, we'll let you go on this last question. In the offseason, it was reported that Brian Campbell took less money to sign with the Blackhawks, that he had more money available to him if he went to a different team. How has he fit in with the Blackhawks on their defense? But he did play a little bit at wing. Is that correct as well?
There was one game where they suited up seven defensemen, but it wasn't. I think Forsling ended up playing on the wing a little bit, but it's you know, he sometimes plays like a forward just in that his offensive ability. But you know, it clicked really early on. They tried to pair him up with Gustav Forsling, who's a young 20-year-old defenseman, and it didn't work out exactly well. And Campbell's been playing on his offside and the right, but as of late, they've had him with Duncan Keith, and him and Duncan Keith have seemed to find some chemistry, and you know, Campbell is still playing on his offside, but he seems like he's been adjusting to that. And you know, last night he scored a power play goal, and as of late, his numbers have been pretty good. And the fact that he did sign for, you know, I think it was $1.5 million, it was a steal for them. And the Blackhawks, again, with their salary cap, you know, constraints, just really couldn't pay him much more than that. So he gave him that hometown discount to come here, and, you know, his offseason almost been in Chicago. So, it's worked out well for him and the Blackhawks, and kind of solidified some of the defense issues the Blackhawks had last season.
Scott, I lied. One more question. It was announced late yesterday, Brian Bickle spent so many years with the Blackhawks, now with the Carolina Hurricanes, was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. Obviously, terrible news, and you know, our thoughts go out to Bickle and his entire family. How was that news taken in the Blackhawks dressing room, where they know him so well for so many seasons?
Yeah, no, it was awful news, and the Blackhawks were shocked, and you know, it hit them really hard about it. And you know, going back to 2015 playoffs, Bickle had you know, he had some issues, and they thought it was vertigo, and you know, there was things that just wouldn't go away, and I know it dealt a lot of frustration for him and even the Blackhawks. And you know, he kind of battled through that, and but you know, this game was never really found any kind of consistency. And last year, he spent most of the year in the AHL, and you know, the Blackhawks kind of trading him this offseason to Carolina, kind of free up some cap space, and just because he had been struggling. And you know, for him, it was just just a lot of frustration over not knowing what was wrong with his body. So I think at some level that there was He certainly didn't want it to be this, but to kind of find it, figure out what it was and what was bothering him, and you know why he was having the issues he was having. But yeah, for the Blackhawks, they also sent their thoughts and prayers with him yesterday, and he had been a big part of that team for a long time and a big presence in that locker room, and he was liked by everyone. So it certainly hit the Blackhawks community pretty hard yesterday.
Hey, Scott, we have one more question. Have people stopped partying in Chicago after the Cubs won the World Series?
Just barely. It was a wild ride. I went down there for the day they won it down to Wrigley Field, and something I'll never forget. And it's been nothing really matters with Chicago right now with what's going on with the Cubs, but it's been a wild ride and a fun month here. And I don't imagine that's going to settle down anytime soon.
Something Chicago's a pretty good city regardless, but now that the Cubs have won the World Series, I'm sure it's taking it to a whole new level, and the Blackhawks hope that they can emulate that come the next June 2017. Scott Powers covers the Chicago Blackhawks for The Athletic in Chicago. Scott, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for doing this.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks a lot, Scott.
Head to break. When we come back, we discuss Connor McDavid and his usage by the Edmonton Oilers. You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
To Eberle. Eberle pushes it ahead. Here is McDavid. McDavid trying to split the defense. McDavid, what a play! What a goal! Oh my! Connor McDavid, welcome back!
Connor McDavid, the second leading scorer in the NHL. 18 points in 15 games played. Are the Edmonton Oilers using him too much? Or should Mike Babcock mind his own damn business? Answer that question in a second, Ezzy. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Also, if you're looking for a place to watch the game, maybe tomorrow afternoon's game, followed by a little bit of Bombers, maybe Tuesday night's Jets-Blackhawks game, Bernstein's Deli, big screen TVs throughout the entire place, full live audio of the game, and some great drink specials. And you can wash it all down with a Legal Curve sandwich as well.
Yeah, I saw last week Tyler from Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club was at Bernstein's trying the Legal Curve sandwich. So
yes.
That was nice to see. I was going to ask you a question, Drew. You know, you're always asking the questions. Do you think Connor McDavid's ever met Connor McGregor?
I doubt it.
They're both Connor Micks.
Yes, they're both.
Do you think they know Kyle Connor and Connor Hellebuyck?
I mean, yeah, exactly.
We're going to go through everybody.
These are questions that need to be answered, Drew.
Why? You're an investigative journalist. You can put on that, your journal. Use that journalism degree for good quality and find out the answer.
Yeah,
to those
take it
questions.
Out of the closet, dust it off, and start
blow the dust off. Yeah.
It's UFC 205 tonight.
Ugh. Who cares?
I don't care.
All right.
I'm sorry. I don't care.
Yeah, you're on the wrong side of that one.
Yeah. I mean, I fully appreciate the work. You know, producer Rory and the guys at the weigh-in do, they do great work covering
I know
the
Big
UFC.
Marv cares.
Big Marv and Rory and those guys love the UFC and all the power to them. It's not my thing.
I think McGregor's going to win tonight and beat Alvarez.
I have no
clue whatsoever. I'd rather talk about wrestling than.
Yeah, I honestly don't know. Now Ezzy's going to get started talking about wrestling, but UFC's not my thing. No. All due respect to everybody else who enjoys it. It's just not my thing. Last week, the Oilers and the Maple Leafs met in Toronto, and Mike Babcock took it upon himself to criticize Todd McClellan and his usage of Connor McDavid. Quote, "You jam a guy out there every shift, like three in a row, stuff like that. It's hard to have the same pop, man," Mike Babcock said after the game, speaking of Connor McDavid's usage. Then last Sunday from Steve Simmons' column in the Toronto Sun. Quote, "An NHL voice on Mike Babcock after he criticized the usage of Connor McDavid in the Toronto-Edmonton game this past week. Mike's drunk with power. What business is it his that McDavid's playing that much?" End quote. Is Babcock wrong to address the usage of another player on a different team?
Well, he's the best coach in the world. So, I mean, it's tough to question Mike Babcock, guys. He's won the Stanley Cups. He's won the Olympic golds. I mean, you don't see head coaches very often, Drew, that are criticizing the minutes that another player is getting. And, you know, Jim Matheson, who we've had on the show before, writes for the Edmonton Journal. He had an article about this a couple of days ago. And, you know, Todd McClellan has come out and said, you know, we're not worried about putting Connor McDavid out there, double shifting him, you know, putting him out there for, you know, 20, 22 minutes a game. So obviously the Oilers aren't worried about it, you know. So Mike Babcock might have been a little bit frustrated, you know, with whatever. I mean, you know, he's a head coach and he's coaching a pretty bad team in the Leafs, even though the Leafs are actually doing a lot better than I thought they would be doing. So, you know, is it right or wrong? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think Mike Babcock should focus on his own team, but certainly the Oilers aren't worried about it. And you know, Dave, Connor McDavid's the best player in the world right now, I think.
Better than Sidney Crosby?
No, he's okay. He's one of the best players in the world right now.
Okay, well,
Sidney Crosby's still the best overall player in the league. But certainly, he is on his way to becoming the best player in the world. Certainly a top five player. So,
for comparison's sake, Ezzy, let me interrupt you for a second. Connor McDavid plays on average 21 minutes and 11 seconds a game. That's fifth most among forwards in the entire league.
Yep.
The only forwards that play more are Patrick Kane, Ryan O'Reilly, Jonathan Toews, and Anze Kopitar. For the record, Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele are seventh and eighth.
Yep.
Sidney Crosby, who I think I would say is still the best player in the game, plays 18 minutes and 22 seconds. That's what he averages on a per-game basis thus far through eight games. Of course, he missed those games
but,
for
injury. But what is the big difference between those minutes? I mean, is he playing a little bit too much? It's possible that he's playing too much, but at the end of the day, it's Todd McClellan's job to decide what is too much or what isn't enough, right? So right now it looks like that he's putting them out there maybe a little bit more than we expect. I mean, look, Connor McDavid's not going to play 12 minutes a game. He's not going to play 14 minutes a game. So you know he's going to be between 18 and 22 minutes every game, right?
Mm-hmm.
He is that good. So, you know,
that's what I
don't have a problem with it.
That was my take on the sort of whole thing, is, you know, with Babcock making his comments. He's Connor McDavid. He's, you know, if not the best player in the game, he's one of the top five players in the game. You know, the Oilers aren't, you know, they don't have an overwhelming, I mean, they have a fair bit of talent, but they don't have the talent at the level of Connor McDavid. What's Todd McClellan supposed to do? Play him less and risk losing games than play him the way he is?
No.
I just never really understood where Babcock was coming from in this instance.
I think, I'll say that I don't think Babcock had any place to say anything about a player's usage on another team. I don't think it's his position to do that. I don't think why does it matter what he thinks about how they use another player? I mean, he can talk about defending that other player, but like I it just seems low to criticize how a coach uses his star players. I just don't understand. The only thing I can think of is that because it's Toronto and because the media is what they are in Toronto, that he was probably just sick and tired of talking about Connor McDavid, and maybe that was his way of lashing out and, you know, kind of trying to change the narrative. Not that it did, because clearly Jim Matheson wrote an article about it, and you see that his numbers aren't, it's not like baseball where you have to put a young pitcher on a pitch count, you know, early in his career so you don't burn out his arm. I mean, this is a young player who's used to playing probably a lot more minutes than this when he played in junior. So I mean, am I worried about Connor McDavid? The guy's second in scoring right now. Like, would he be first in scoring? Is that what Mike Babcock's concern is? That Connor McDavid should be first in scoring and 5 points ahead of Mark Scheifele and not 2 points behind him? I mean, it's such a ridiculous conversation because it, like I said, first of all, his minutes aren't disproportionately higher than anybody else's, any of the other top centers in the league. Mm-hmm. So right then and there, you know, okay, then the conversation seems somewhat moot because he is a top player in the league and his minutes are in line with what everybody else is playing.
Yeah.
So I just think, like, in this instance, I think Mike Babcock should be questioned because I think he should have kept his mouth shut. I don't think he had any right to say anything about somebody else's team.
And Dave, you could probably say as well that Mike Babcock should focus on the fact that after scoring 4 goals in his first game, Austin Matthews only has 2 goals in his last 13 games.
I think that would be more concerning than Connor McDavid's usage for Mike Babcock. Coming up next, Mike Commodore joins us. He's no fan of Mike Babcock. We'll talk about that with Mr. Commodore next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
On the Curve, on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Minuke with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program former NHL player and current Uber driver, Mike Commodore. Mike, good afternoon, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. Mike, got to start with your Uber ride last night. Tyson Nash was on the show on Wednesday, so you happened to pick him up as his Uber yesterday. Is that correct?
Yeah, but it wasn't random. I worked for a couple of hours, and then for a few hours. I don't know, three or four maybe. And then I went home, and I was just kind of laying around. And I know Tyson pretty good, and then he was hanging out at a Chuck Kobus's place, so I'm real good friends with. So Chuck sent me a message asking if I was Ubering, that somebody, one of his buddies needed a ride. So I said, yeah, I'll come over there. And so I just buzzed up and picked him up, and yeah, hung out for a little bit actually too, but it was fun.
How is the Uber world? Are you enjoying it? Like, you know, is it good to meet people? You know, sometimes you hear some horror stories, but you know, so far so good.
Yeah. Overall, like, I mean, I had one ride that was a little. I can't say it was a horror story. I mean, the girl was, totally wasted, puked in my car, but wow. I yelled at the boyfriend. It ended up being in a bag. Like, it ended up, everything worked out okay, but it was kind of a pain. I mean, dealing with drunks when you're stone cold sober isn't that much fun. But no, I mean, it's okay. I mean, it's all right. I do enjoy talking to people. It's kind of fun when you go to pick somebody up and you never know who's going to get into your car. The only thing that kind of sucks is, especially around here, because Phoenix is a big city, mm-hmm. and, I mean, it's pretty spread out also, is that, you know, when somebody orders an Uber, all I see is their... I don't see their name. All I see is their passenger rating and their how many minutes they are from me. And then once I accept it and go pick them up, then I find out where they're going. So I've had a couple of rides where it's like, I mean, I got to take them 45, 50 miles away, which isn't really what I'm in this for. So that sucks. And the pay is brutal. Anybody who tells you they're killing it driving for Uber is full of it. It's awful. Like, a normal ride is probably about $5-6, and they're in the car for, like, let's say 20-25 minutes.
Oh, man.
You're not, your gas mileage isn't worth that.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah, I'm not doing it for the money, so it's fine with me. But, yeah, I mean, when you bring everything in, gas, you know, wear and tear in your car, you know, you got to keep your car kind of clean. And so, and anyways.
Mike, we want to continue to talk Uber with you, and we want to talk hockey with you as well. But you know, you mentioned that you live in Arizona, and I follow you on Twitter, and you were absolutely hilarious on election night in the USA. So we got to ask you, you know, how were the responses from those American women that were looking for a good Canadian boy?
I mean, it just kind of came to me, so I fired it out there. You know what? It was. I got a little bit of everything. Like, I got some responses, some emails that were, like, legitimate. I mean, I figured people would kind of understand that. I am joking. I mean, not really. But I legitimately got – I probably got about, let's say, 100
wow.
Emails. I'd say, like, probably half of them were, like, legitimate, well, like, thought-out, well-written, like, applications. Like, where they wrote this out, and I sit there reading them, I'm like, oh, my God, when does this end? Somebody put some time into this. And then some of them were just, I think some of them were kind of funny, and then some of them were pretty nasty. Yeah, I mean, you got a little bit of everything. And then I ended up going on a radio show in Houston, and then I went on a morning show in Philadelphia. And then so I've kind of gotten a little, there's been some more emails and some Instagram stuff off that, so. Yeah, haven't found anybody. I don't know if I could say that I found any
no soulmates yet.
Prospects. Yeah, but it's been kind of funny.
Mike, you were talking about analytics last week on your Twitter feed, which I agree with, as is amazing. So, what did you notice anything? Because you were watching the Preds game. Did you end up testing what your eyes saw versus the analytics of the game?
You know what? I ended up going, I went to the game and I watched the game, But I ended up, I had a couple extra tickets, and I ran into a couple of buddies, actually, of mine from the University of North Dakota from back in the day. So we ended up sitting there, and I hadn't seen this guy since 97. So we ended up talking more. I was trying to watch the game, but I can't, like, I wasn't mad, but I was watching. We ended up talking the whole time, and I was trying to watch, so I can't say, like, I need to go do it again when I'm, like, actually there and I have a chance to sit there and, like, watch the game. Like, I didn't get to watch it enough to make, like a good observation.
You're a pretty outspoken guy. What do you think about the role of, like, analytics playing, you know, in the hockey world?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I've read about it a little bit, and I see, you know, I follow different fans and stuff on Twitter from wherever, really, but, you know, from Carolina, a couple people come to mind that are, you know, fire out these graphs where they got pictures of, like, the team's logos on different quadrants, and I'm like, what the hell is this? And then, you know, so I do look a little bit. I don't know enough, but, yeah, I mean, I think there would be some value. It's probably, my guess is it's probably like most other things where there's probably some value in it, but, you know, if you get all money-balled, fantasy nerded up and that's all you care about and that's how you decide who's a good player or not, I'm going to guess that's probably probably isn't the right way to do it either. Yeah. I mean, there's some traits and some things you can do in hockey that I don't think are really measurable on a chart. So I bet you, but I would guess that there's some value to it. Yeah, for sure.
Mike Commodore, a guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mike, of course, played in the NHL for a number of seasons. Mike, I want to go back to the election on you know, of course, your tweets were very funny, and I was laughing along with them. You look at the NBA, and you got coaches like Stan Van Gundy and Steve Kerr, and I don't know if you saw Greg Popovich's comments last night where he spoke, well, as eloquently as anybody has regarding the election result. And they're speaking forcefully, and players themselves are speaking out against the result. And then you have the NHL, where really nobody that, you know, connected to the world of hockey, aside from you, has said a damn thing about the election result. Why is that? Are hockey players more cautious in general? Are they less politically inclined? I mean, you were in dressing rooms for so many years. Why has it been so quiet from the hockey world, where players in other sports have been speaking out so forcefully?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. Off the top, I've never thought about it like that. Off the top of my head, I guess maybe, yeah, I think compared to basketball players, this is a guess, I would say that maybe hockey players are a little bit more reluctant to come out and say things that, you know, would put focus on them. I mean, if that makes sense, or like, I think they would just be a little bit more cautious about putting their foot in their mouth or saying something that upsets people. They just kind of want to stay away from the limelight, you know, a little bit. I mean, that election was a big, I mean, obviously it was the biggest thing in the world going on. And I mean, I commented on it a little bit, I mean, just kind of in a funny way. I think people are out of their minds when they're, I mean, and I thought Hillary Clinton, I didn't like either one of them, and I can't vote here. I'm not a citizen, but I mean, they both look like scumbags, to be honest with you. But one of them is going to be president. But, I mean, the protests, I mean, people need to relax. I mean, at the end of the day, you know who should, anybody who's listening should read. I posted it on Facebook. I saw it on Facebook. You know that Mike Lowe from the Dirty Jobs show?
Yep.
Yeah. You know, and he was, I guess he's pretty political, and he came out, like, on his Facebook page. If you're looking for something that I think kind of sums it up, he can sum it up way better than I can. Go read Mike Lowe wrote a little thing on Facebook about what he thought about the election, and it is really well done. I think it just kind of it really sums it up where people just need to relax. That's it. The world's not going to end. Yeah, Donald Trump said some dumb things, and yeah, he probably is a scumbag, but give him a shot.
Mike, we're going to get away from politics here for a second, even though Drew probably wants to get into the, you know, the primaries and everything like that here. But, you know, you mentioned the University of North Dakota earlier. You actually won a championship, a national championship with North Dakota in 2000. Winnipeg's Lee Gorin was on that team. Do you follow University of North Dakota hockey a lot? And what was it like to see that the University of North Dakota had won their first championship since 2000 last year?
Yeah, no, I've always tried to, you know, I it's been a couple of years now, but I've tried to since I turned pro. And I mean, I didn't get to my first couple summers. I went back to the University of North Dakota when I was a pro. I've always tried to, you know, whenever there was a lockout or an Olympic break or something like that, I would try and get back there. I followed them. You know, I mean, I can't say I watch their games on the internet or on TV, but I do follow the box scores and I do keep an eye on where they're at in the standings and where they're at nationally. And yeah, no, it was, I mean, it was great to see them win last year. It almost got to the point where it was, you're wondering if it's ever really going to happen again. Cause if you look at from 2000 when our team won and to last year, if you look at the players and the teams that they had go through there, I mean, there's some legit, like, potential NHL Hall of Famers. And, I mean, now it's a team game. But there were some really good teams that went in there. North Dakota went to the Frozen Four. I don't know how many times, but it was a bunch. Just never worked out. So, no, it was great to see them win. I mean, 16 years is a long time for a program like that. They, with the facilities they have, they should have no problem recruiting people, and they don't. And it was fun. It was fun to watch. I watched the game. It was nice.
Mike, you know, hockey players generally won't talk out about their, fellow players in contract situations, and Jacob Trouba was obviously holding out here in Winnipeg for quite some time. Does that create ill feelings by his fellow players when they're in camp and they're, you know, in the trenches and he's sitting out in Michigan back home and then finally signs?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know what? I don't know. I know what happened. I think he ended up signing a 2-year deal there for $6 million or whatever, and it kind of ended up, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it kind of ended up, I mean, Winnipeg, the Jets kind of stuck to their guns, and it's kind of a waste of a time for them, wasn't it?
Yeah. Basically, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, no, I don't think, business is business. I mean, I don't think that, look, if you're, I think the only thing that would be a little bit sticky there as far as in the dressing room type stuff would be, like, did he want out? Did he publicly say he wants out?
Yeah, he did.
Okay.
But he didn't say based on the city. He just simply said it was based on his usage.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what? I don't think it would be a big deal, to be totally honest with you. I don't think when he comes back, guys are, I mean, it depends on his personality, but I don't think guys would be, you know, upset about it. Business is business. Hey, you need to make as much money as you possibly can in the little time that you get to play professional hockey. I think a lot of guys understand that. And I don't think it would be a big deal at all. And hey, if he wasn't happy with how he was being used and wanted out, I don't think that's all, like I said, that's all kind of personal stuff. That's all business stuff. And I don't think that would be a big deal at all in the locker room, to be honest with you.
Mike Commodore, a guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mike, I'll let you go on this last question. The previous segment, we were talking about Mike Babcock, and you've been quite vocal about your dislike.
I was going to get out without hearing it.
Yeah. You've been quite vocal about your dislike for Mike Babcock. And earlier, you know, about a week or 10 days ago, he was criticizing Todd McClellan over the Oilers' usage of Connor McDavid. You know, and then, you know, in a column later in the week, one general manager anonymously referred to Mike Babcock as being drunk with power. Do you feel that it's completely out of bounds for one head coach to criticize another head coach's usage of arguably either the best or one of the top five players in the entire NHL?
Yeah, I do. And that doesn't – look, I hate Mike Babcock. I mean, there's no – I'm not going to get into the whole thing with that because I'll run right through the end of your guys' show. But, I mean, I don't like him at all, obviously, but it doesn't matter who it is. I mean, whatever coach it is, look, let's – and it doesn't matter who the player is either. I mean, obviously, especially if it's Connor McDavid, then that's going to get a lot of attention. This kid's unbelievable. He's the next coming. I mean, so obviously that's going to grab headlines in his own. But look, you just look at what he said. Why do you think he said something? Because he can associate himself a little bit with Connor McDavid, make some headlines. I'd like to know who that GM was and send him a tweet saying congratulations, thank you. Yeah. Anyways, you shouldn't say anything. He shouldn't have said anything. I think that's way offside. I would imagine Todd McClellan wasn't very happy. I know I wouldn't be.
Yeah, and they were former colleagues in Detroit.
No, they were, 100%. Yeah, no, I would think, and I don't know Todd. I've never met him. I heard he's a good guy. I would think when he heard that, I would imagine that he wasn't very happy having another coach publicly try and tell you how to coach your team, that you're making mistakes.
Mike Commodore. Pardon me, Mike.
don't call me Mike Babcock.
Sorry, easy. Put my foot in my mouth there.
You can literally call me anything else.
Well, I'll call you my Uber driver. How about that?
That's fine. No
okay.
problem.
Mike, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for having me.
Mike, by the way, if you're ever up in Winnipeg, you know, let us know and we'll go crush some whiskeys.
Yeah. It's been a while since I've crushed whiskey in Winnipeg. I could do that again.
Sounds like a date, Mike. Appreciate it.
All right. See ya.
Take care. Mike Commodore, let's head to break. When we come back, we discuss the disappointing performance of the Calgary Flames thus far this season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
On the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Our top guys aren't getting it done. And I'm not one for calling players out or naming names, but our top guys are not playing up to their level. It's that simple. And early in the season, you could point to new coach, new systems, Johnny and Monty both missed training. Those were all legitimate reasons for a slow start. They're not legitimate reasons now. 15 games in or 14 games in, whatever it is, those are excuses now.
Calgary Flames president Brian Burke not holding back in criticizing his best players as the Flames are off to a very disappointing start to the 2016-17 season. 5-9-1 is what the Flames are after their defeat at the hands of the Dallas Stars on Thursday night. They lose to the Stars by a 4-2 score. And thus far in Calgary, a team that I think a lot of people had high expectations of, certainly could have thought that they were a playoff team, Dave. The Flames certainly just aren't getting it done this early in the NHL season. You know, I had the Flames. I thought the Flames were going to be better this year. I thought it was a down year last year. New head coach.
It's still early, Drew.
Yeah, it is early, Ezzy, but they're 5-9-1. It's not like they're right around 500. It's not like they're, you know, 6-6-2 or something.
It's early.
5-9-1 is a, it's a hole that you have to dig yourself out of. And it's
Pittsburgh
not,
last year.
Okay, fine, yes, but then it's, you can only say, you say it's early, and then all of a sudden it's the end of November, and it's not early anymore.
Once you hit that Thanksgiving deadline, you're in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, they're not playing.
U.S. Thanksgiving,
yeah. They're not playing well, and I certainly think that there's cause for concern in Calgary thus far this year.
Well, just like the, you know, David, just wanted to say quickly, I mean, look at the Oilers, and we know that they had a bit of an easier schedule. I mean, you don't award a playoff spot in November. That's all I'm saying. I mean, look at what Pittsburgh did. Pittsburgh was way out of a playoff spot when Mike Sullivan took over. So, you know, let's wait here. I mean, there is cause for concern here in Calgary, Drew, absolutely. Probably the biggest cause for concern, Dave, is the way Brian Elliott has played.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Is their goaltending is second worst in terms of goals against in the league right now. They've given up like 55 goals. The only team worse is the Flyers. So, I mean, they brought in Brian Elliott to be the guy, to be the number one goaltender. And between him and Chad Johnson, I mean, you're not getting what you need. I mean, and again, I don't watch Calgary enough to say how the defense is playing specifically, but you can see. You know, I mean, I do see the highlights, right? And I see some of the goals that are being given up, and you're sitting there going, well, wait a second, you're supposed to be, you were brought in to be the number one guy. That's what this team is relying upon you to be. And, you know, you're clearly, like, if you look at the goals for, Calgary is sixth in the Western Conference right now for goals for. So they're putting the puck in the net. They're not keeping the puck out of the net.
Right.
And again, they don't put it in as often as Winnipeg, who's also letting in the puck too much right now.
And you've got to be concerned, Drew, that Michael Frolik is leading the team in points right now, and Sean Monahan only has 4 goals in 15 games. I mean, Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau were given big boy contracts.
Yeah.
I mean, they're making a lot of money, and they might be young. I mean, Sean Monahan's obviously several years younger than Johnny Gaudreau, but I mean, these guys have to be putting the puck in the net more than they have been, and they will. And, you know, Matthew Tkachuk, I think, has been very impressive as rookie. The future certainly looks bright for the Calgary Flames. I didn't have them as a playoff team for the simple fact of the matter that they don't get enough scoring after guys like Gaudreau and Monahan. So I think they're top heavy. I think, you know, they don't get enough secondary scoring. We're seeing that already. And, you know, Brian Elliott, I don't know, guys, what's going on with Brian Elliott, but he was outstanding for the St. Louis Blues in the playoffs last year. He was tremendous.
Well, that's why they brought him in. They brought him in to – everybody said 2 years ago the Flames were a playoff team. They defeated the Canucks in the first round. They went to the second round of the playoffs. Last year, their goaltending was horrific. Everybody said, get a better goaltender and you're going to rebound. Well, they went and got that better goaltender in Brian Elliott, or what they thought would be a better goaltender in Brian Elliott. He's got an .885 save percentage and a 3.30 goals against average. I mean, those numbers are astoundingly bad in this day and age in the NHL.
They really are. Yeah, and there's nothing else you can really say aside from the fact that, you know, the goaltending has not been good so far this year, Dave and Drew, and it's got to be better. And, you know, they gave up the second-round pick to get Brian Elliott because goaltending was their Achilles heel last year, Drew. So, I mean, Brian Burke is obviously not happy with the way his team has played. Brad Treliving can't be happy with the way his team is playing. But the good news, you know, to look at it, you know, glass half full, Drew, that Pacific division is horrible.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's they're lucky that they play in a very poor division right now where they're, you know, only a couple of points behind, away from getting back into the flow of things. But, you know, they've given up 55 goals, which is the second most in the entire NHL. They've only scored 38 goals, so you got a minus 17 goal differential. And, Dave, you mentioned the Jets. I mean, the Jets, you know, have scored 47 goals and given up 48 goals. So at least there's balance and some symmetry there that, yeah, you can't, the puck's going in too much, but at least you're scoring a ton.
The Flames also have the worst power play in the NHL.
Worst power play in the
and
NHL.
And they have the second worst penalty kill. So, that's, I mean, when your special teams are that atrocious, I mean, the fact of the matter is that the Jets, at least they're, you know, you want to have that balance. You're talking about balance, right? But like these guys, or even just have an overabundance of one and just be balanced in the other. But the problem is like when you're terrible in both areas and you're giving up power play goals and you're not scoring on the power play, the reality is you're not going to win a lot of games.
Well, right now the Flames are bad offensively or...
No, they're
average offensively. Well, how about that? Let's go with average offensively in terms of goals for in the entire NHL.
Well, as he's right, they're top heavy.
Yeah, they're 13th in goals for. So they're average in goals for. They're terrible in goals against, and they're terrible on special teams. Other than that, though, they're having a great season.
Well, no, but you're right, though, Drew. I mean,
the numbers are the numbers. They're not making them up.
They're not playing well right now, and they still can turn it around, but they got to turn it around quickly. Well, they can't turn it around in January. No. They've got to turn it around here in November. But you know, I think there's something to be said for having so many young players in the lineup at once. I mean, we know Matthew Tkachuk's in there as an 18-year-old. I mean, he's too good to send back to London of the OHL. But you've got Sam Bennett. He's struggling in his second year in the NHL. Sean Monahan struggling right now. It's a very young team. The D-Core is a veteran D-Core, and Brian Elliott is a veteran goaltender. But they have a lot of young forwards there. And, you know, they're going through some struggles right now earlier in their career. So, I mean, this Flames organization, I think, is trending in the right direction. But right now, they got to turn it around quickly or they're not going to the playoffs this year.
And that's the thing is that, I mean, I think everybody expected that with good goaltending this year, things would be better. Or with a NHL goaltender. Because last year they didn't have an NHL goaltender. And everybody thought Brian Elliott coming in, he's going to be the panacea. He's going to solve all the problems. This should be a playoff team in a bad division.
Hold on, though. I mean, that was a good trade. I mean, it's not looking like a good trade right now. But at the time, there wasn't one person who was saying that was a bad trade. So Brian Elliott has played particularly poorly, but I think he'll turn it around.
I think that the odds are... I'd be surprised if this was the beginning of the end for Brian Elliott, let's say. I would expect that he's going to bounce back. But, you know, you said it's early, but you're a fifth of the way through the year already.
Drew, Doug Armstrong looks like a pretty smart guy, doesn't he, right now, for going with Jake Allen. I realize the Blues have been struggling a little bit. Drew, you okay? Drew's coughing a little bit here, Dave. I think we're going to have to take over the show.
We got it. Let's do this. About time. Our plan finally worked. It only took to the 11:30 mark for us to take out Drew Mandel.
Dave, I would offer Drew some water. Drew, are you okay?
Going to break.
Wait, do who gets to send it to break as you or me?
Go for it, Dave.
Take us to break.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Yeah. Oh,
11:30 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Apologies for that choking fit. I should really know better than eating T-bone steak while on the air at the same time.
We're just happy you're okay, Drew.
Holy, that was that came out of nowhere. My wife's had a bit of a cough, so I'm hopeful that I didn't actually just catch hers, and that would be bad.
Keep it to your side of the studio.
I'll keep
then.
It to my side of the studio here. Anyways, Drew Mundell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manuk with you. We head back to the Hockey Show Hotline and bring in LA Kings insider John Rosen.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
John Rosen, LA Kings insider, good friend of the program. John, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Good morning. How you guys doing?
Doing very well, John. How about yourself?
Not too bad. Actually, you know, I had to step off of this Kings road trip for a couple of days. I returned to Southern California we'll be missing the Winnipeg game tomorrow. But apparently there was some news in this Kings team yesterday.
Yeah, you know, Jeff Zatkoff goes out, and then, you know, more importantly, Andre Kopitar leaves the game against Ottawa. It turns out to be a very disappointing loss for this for the Kings. But Andre Kopitar, I guess no update on his health status as of yet?
No, the team is always very mum. Daryl likes to provide those updates himself. I'm not sure if we'll get anything today, but we're all standing by. It just happened on a fairly innocuous dump into the offensive zone where he just, it wasn't even really a hit. It's even hard to say, tangled up with Mark Mathot in the boards in the right wing corner. Just something happened awkwardly there. And he traveled with a team to Winnipeg from Ottawa. But one thing that you can say about Andre Kopitar is that he's incredibly resilient. This is a player that ever since he broke his ankle at the very end of the 10-11 season, the five seasons that followed, he has missed 0, 1, 0, 3, and 1 game. And this is a player who goes up against the other team's top players, plays top minutes, and has taken some lumps, some big dings. I remember one particularly big hit from Brendan Morrow when he was playing with Dallas in the 11-12 season. Several other big hits of the last couple of years, two last year from Ryan Reeves on Winnipeg, too. So he'll miss the odd game here or there, and it's too early right now at this point to know whether or not he will play against the Jets tomorrow afternoon.
John, nobody knows the Kings better than you, and what's your take on this Kings team so far? They're one game under 500, kind of, you know, similar start to the Winnipeg Jets here. They've lost their last two games. Before that, they hammered the Toronto Maple Leafs 7-0. Obviously, losing Jonathan Quick is a huge loss for the Los Angeles Kings. But are the Kings kind of where you thought they would be at this point of the season? What's your read on this group?
Yeah, thank you for that note too. Thanks at the beginning. You know, this is a team that probably, when you consider all the injuries and what they've had to deal with over the course of this year, probably maybe where you'd expect them to be, but kind of with a little bit of an appreciation of again the resilience of this team, just because they have dealt with a loss to one of their captains, one of the most important players in their leadership group, and one of the best goalies in the world, Jonathan Quick. Marian Gaborik obviously being injured at the World Cup of Hockey. Braden McNabb, who was absolutely terrific through the first, I believe, 9 games of the season that he played. He was somebody that had been taking that step forward. Too small of a sample size to know really whether that was something that was going to really continue over the course of the year. But everything in terms of playing alongside Doughty, earning top minutes, and even playing with very strong possession rates, he had a very strong start to the season too. Really digging deep into that goaltending well for Peter Budaj. Somebody who came to camp in a PTO back in the 15-16 season and has really admirably stepped up with injuries to both Quick and Zatkoff. So with that being said, they've struggled to score at times, but we're seeing some signs that might be pretty positive for this team, you know, once you get, you know, 20, 30 games under their belt. One of the questions going into this year with the Kings was how are they going to get that secondary scoring? Something for probably the last 2 years, the third line, the fourth line, they weren't getting a ton, especially out of those centers. What we've seen right now is a development into a pretty strong third line. This has been encouraging for Kings fans. That third line of Dustin Brown, Nick Dowd, and Devin Setoguchi has been a really good north-south line that skates pretty well for this Kings team. Brown has had, you know, it's too early to say whether it's a renaissance, but he's certainly had an encouraging start to the year and besting his, you know, the projected points that he's on for right now, practically doubling what he's had over the last several years. He's on pace for the upper 40s, low 50s right now at this point. And Devin Setoguchi, it's not just a nice story, but he's been somebody that's been providing some strong minutes for Daryl Sutter so far. It's not just the goal scored. He has two of them. Both of them came in a win over Calgary a week ago. But skates well, has found that chemistry, and Nick Dowd, a first-year player, 26 years old, has been somebody that adds really good playmaking. Again, a good skater, gets up and down the ice really well. This is a player who was the top defensive player in the NCHC back when he was at St. Cloud State 3 years ago. So he's somebody that has that kind of defensive smarts and is able to play that shutdown center role as well. That's been encouraging. So if they can continue to get a little bit more from their fourth line too, and of course they're going to need players like Kopitar, eventually Tyler Toffoli, to continue their scoring, which has been a hit or miss at times this season, then their offense probably shouldn't take too much of a hit. It was 15th middle of the pack last year, but let's remember they lost Milan Lucic. So they're holding their own. They're, I don't want to say treading water, but so far an admirable maybe 7-8 so far.
John, the obviously you touched on Jonathan Quick going down with injury early in the season, and there was some talk about Andre Pavlik even being looked at, and instead the Kings have chosen to stick with Budaj and Zadkov. Do you think the general consensus is they made the right decision going within the organization?
Yeah, I think so too, and it's because they don't have any cap space right now. Their options are really limited. They have, we assume, because they're not sharing right now on the LTIR, but all signs point to Jonathan Quick having been placed on LTIR. That was when Rob Scuderi was called up in a transaction that immediately sent down just to maximize the effects of putting a player on long-term injured reserve. That would most likely be Quick. But Quick is going to come off injured reserve in the second half of the season. So were the Kings to acquire a player with a substantial cap hit, then all of a sudden they'd be shifting, having to move some contract over the second half of the season, and no one's going to be throwing a lifeline then at that point. When you look, and we know what Andre Pavlik has done against the Los Angeles Kings. This is a player that has put up good numbers, above a .920 career save percentage against Los Angeles, and he's won them some games in Winnipeg, in Los Angeles too. I just don't see it being a stark difference from the type of sturdy goaltending that they're getting right now from Peter Budaj. He's giving them a chance to win virtually every single night. Jeff Zadkov only played two periods last night before having to leave. He removed himself from the game because of an injury, according to what Daryl Sutter had said last night. They're going to continue with what they have for right now and see where that takes them. But there are no quick fixes for this team. Jonathan Quick is somebody that, again, apart from what he does on the ice, is somebody that has, all those types of intangibles and the stuff that, maybe might be overlooked, by some that might put too much stock just into numbers and just into the cold, hard data, but somebody that makes the players around him better and somebody that the team goes to battle for every single night.
John Rosen is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can read John's work at LAKingsInsider.com. John, prior to the start of the season, Teddy Purcell was maybe a sleeper pick for those poolies, playing on a line with, it was thought to be with Andre Kopitar. And safe to say thus far that the returns on Teddy Purcell have been a little disappointing for the Los Angeles Kings. He's got 1 point in 7 games. Of course, he missed a number of games with an injury, but he's been back in the Kings lineup for a number of about 5 games now. And safe to say the results have been a little disappointing.
I think yes, to an extent, but I think we're starting to see maybe some signs of breaking out of that. And he had a nice assist in last night's game against Ottawa, in which he was able to hold on to the puck for an extra beat before dishing it to Jeff Carter, whose shot was deflected into the net by Dwight King. But, I think this is a player that if you're expecting him to really offset a substantial portion of the production lost from Milan Lucic's departure, then you're probably going to end up being disappointed. But it was a player who, at the very end of training camp, had a little bit of a ding. It was a lower body injury, something that, as Daryl Sutter said, brought him down to about 90%, was able to skate through it. There weren't days where he was really off the ice for any stretches of time, but had to work through that and was somebody that didn't have that opportunity really to get going at the very end of camp and at the very beginning of this year. And so he's just looking for kind of a rhythm to get into right now. It's a player who's generally a good playmaking type forward who is, maybe in the 30 to 40 assists over the course of a season, 25 to 35 probably more accurately. But again, Teddy Purcell has a little bit of offensive creativity. The Kings are always going to be a team that can use a little bit of an infusion of skill, and he has some of that. So we're going to see where he's at a little while from now. But as of for right now, it's a player that, when you think of Daryl Sutter and the way that this team has really found its success as a possession team, as a team that really in previous years really one of the heaviest teams in the league and one of the most physical teams, I think that's evolving somewhat. The Kings, like a lot of teams, are starting to head towards maybe a little bit more of that up and down, north-south speed, a little bit of skill. a type of identity of the King. I don't think that's really fully changed yet at this point. But the Kings are a team that gets up and down the ice and plays with a very good pace when they're playing well, probably more to the extent that some might give them credit for. So he's going to help with that, and he's somebody that is able to play with that raised pace. But to this point, it hasn't just translated into the numbers yet. As you mentioned, just one assist so far. So I think those points are coming, but to this point, not yet.
John, I wanted to ask you about Jake Muzzin. He surprised many people by making Team Canada's World Cup of Hockey roster. I think he's a very underrated defenseman. I'm a big fan of his game. You know, so far this year, he's struggled. He's only got 2 points in 15 games after having back-to-back 40-point seasons, not playing with Drew Doughty on that top pair, but playing on that second pair with Alec Martinez. Is he just off to a bit of a slow start?
Yeah, I think the numbers aren't there because the Kings' power play has really struggled to start the season, and he's somebody that is among one of the top power play shots from the blue line and one of the best puck distributors on the power play in the league, too. He's also a player that I think him and Alec Martinez, his pair, their kind of responsibilities are shifting a little bit, though there was a while Martinez has been the top scorer on this Kings team. So Martinez is getting those points at even strength play when they have been on the ice together. But Muzzin has had several good games, and then he'll follow it up with a stretch of several games that haven't been as good. The consistency is what's going to be needed from Jake Muzzin from this point forward right now. There's no question his athleticism, his ability to play that really modern style of a defensive role where he can skate really well. He's 6'3", has a great hockey body, can play very physical, and somebody that can also gets back well and is somebody that can disrupt plays in his own defensive end. Sutter has been very complimentary of certain games that they've had, that pairing together. But just for the last couple of games, so far the last two games on that road trip, especially probably the Montreal game where the Kings lost 4-1, wasn't one of his best games of the season. So at the end of the year, you'll probably look up and we'll see that he'll have somewhere in the 30 to 40, maybe more than that, points. But that's not going to happen until this Kings power play gets going. It's been a bit of a sore spot to start the year so far.
John, on your LA Kings Insider website, you often do your post-game quotes with Daryl Sutter. How much fun is it to cover Daryl Sutter? Like, I was just reading one of them, and after the Kings beat the Leafs 7-0, said after the game one was enough, we should have saved five. Like, it seems like you get a lot of gold for that column.
I shuddered while you guys were saying that too. It's a lot of fun most of the time. There are times where where it's difficult because you have to, our job is to try and kind of call information from him and get information, and he's somebody that won't be regularly supplying that. There's no doubting how good of a person and how great of a character he is. Once those recorders are down, that whether you're talking baseball, whether you're talking family, whether you're talking transportation, getting from Montreal to Santa Barbara for a wedding, as I had to do this past couple days ago. So he's somebody that very well, very intelligent and understands and knows so much that's going on. But it can be difficult getting information from him. But there's always a good dose of sarcasm. I think you're best off if you don't go into those scrums looking for any really wider, big picture type question. You don't want to elevate the individual over maybe a line or a group or a unit. Don't refer to a line as a second pair or second line, third line, fourth line. I break all of these rules daily, and maybe my confidence at times over the course of the year takes a hit because of that. But there are some really good gems. It's actually really interesting, the 2 days that the team spent in Montreal. There can be a pretty direct media corps in Montreal. We don't get to see it that often. We only visit once a year, like the Jets. But, I think there was some really good give and take. And, there were questions being asked, about whether Peter Budaj was going to start, whether Tom Gilbert would be in against the Habs. And he said, we go back the line, this ain't baseball, where it's not baseball. You don't list your starters 5 days in advance. It's not football. And then the question was asked, well, why isn't it? There's kind of a directness and interesting give and take that we saw when we were in Montreal. And I think in a lot of the Canadian cities too, he appreciates really the type of discourse that you get that you maybe don't get regularly, when you're traveling on, in 5-6 game, U.S., whether in the Southeast, West, wherever in the United States, type of road trips. that the Kings go on. So it's an interesting conversation. It's a challenge, and you know, it's there have been some beauties. If you go search awesome Daryl Sutter quotes, which is a tag on the site, you'll find some real gems, and he's had a couple so far this year.
John, we'll let you go on this last question. It's Hockey Hall of Fame induction weekend. Rogge Vachon, of course, legendary Los Angeles Kings goaltender, getting inducted last night and then this weekend in Toronto. Just how important is Rogge Vachon to the history and to the Los Angeles Kings organization?
Until Jonathan Quick has done what he's done, I mean, this was without question the best goaltender, and probably other than Wayne Gretzky, the most important player in the history of the Los Angeles Kings, just because without Rogge and what he did, and with some okay Kings teams in the mid-1970s, 1974, 75 probably being the best of them, lifted them on his back and really took him into the playoffs and was a, for several years, a superstar goaltender. On a team that really didn't have much to celebrate at that point. So was very important from kind of building that bridge up until the later 80s when the team started really getting some of those homegrown stars like Jim Fox, Luke Robitaille, Jimmy Carson, Bernie Nichols, Steve Duchesne, and then, you know, obviously supplanting that with Wayne Gretzky. It's something that Kings fans have been calling on for a long, long time. And it was great to be in Montreal a couple nights ago. The Kings have been in Chicago for the Marian Hossa ceremony, now in Montreal for a Rogge Vachon ceremony. And when you can get those types of original six pageantry type nights, that's incredible. That's awesome. But you know, it's been a hard year for Rogge too. His wife passed away about 9 months ago, right now, 10 months ago. So, you know, I spoke with him about that, and he was just so smitten with his wife, Nicole, just a special relationship that he had, that this was something that it could never replace what her memory was. It could never, you know, do anything to lessen a lot of the pain that he went through over the course here. But it does have a little bit of an ending that makes you feel really happy and really good for him, given what he's gone through over the past year. And to know that he got in so many years after he was first eligible to get in, that's a special story. It's a great story in the National Hockey League. And, you know, his 30 hangs up in the rafters at Staples Center and did back at the Forum. So for the Kings fans, this is a long time coming. It'll be a really, really special day on Monday, and as this weekend continues in Toronto.
John Rosen covers the Los Angeles Kings for LAKingsInsider.com. John, appreciate your time this morning. We're sorry that we won't be seeing you in the peg, but I hope you have a good or attend a very nice wedding at least.
Thank you very much. I'm bummed. The best press box view, one of the best games environments in the entire National Hockey League, was always a very special stop on the trip. So bummed I won't see you guys, but next year, and always enjoy coming on the show. Thank
hey,
you so
there,
much.
There could be a playoff series this year. Let's not get too far ahead of ourselves.
Oh gosh, I don't. I hope they don't bring back the you know, who's your captain type chant, because that was something that always resonated. It, especially, you know, when we hear some of the chirps towards you know, some of the players on the Ducks and some of the players on the Sharks that the Jets fans have been given too. So,
yeah, they tend to be a little ruthless sometimes.
Take it easy, guys.
Thanks a lot, John.
Appreciate your time. Ted to break. One final segment upcoming. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
One final segment this Saturday morning. It's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town after two sold-out weeks. Daryl Lennox is in town. Tickets sold out for the early show. Tickets available for the 10 p.m. show, but they're going quickly. So Daryl Lennox in town at Rumors. Get your tickets now. And then, of course, reminder, Jay Farrow from Saturday Night Live just announced for March, and Aries Spears from Mad TV coming up in January. Now, Ezzy, you were doing pre and post with Ricker. I guess it was Thursday night.
Yep.
And people brought you pizza.
Yep.
I need to hear this. I missed the story. I saw you tweeting about pizza.
Well, Drew, you missed it because you were in bed at 9 o'clock.
No, I stayed awake for the entire game.
And then went to bed.
I went to bed at 11 o'clock, yes.
We were here till 12:30.
Well,
I mean, someone's got to keep this station going here. Me and Rick are
You guys were banging out some content.
Yeah, yeah, we were, burning the midnight oils, as they say.
Well, somebody brought you pizza, so I know that you weren't going, now you're just going.
It was oily. So there's definitely some oils.
Where did this pizza come from? What's the origin of this pizza? Yeah. I don't understand what was happening. That, first of all, have people not learned in the, I don't know, how many years has this show been on for now? 7 years, something like that?
Too many.
Too many is for sure. That if they feed you, that they're never going to get rid of you? That's literally the problem.
It's like the gremlins. You're not supposed to feed them after midnight.
Yeah. Well, basically what happened on Thursday night was radio magic. And, big shout out to DJ's restaurant in St. James, the Ichabod Lounge. Chris and Monica brought us a pizza on Thursday night, as you mentioned, Drew. It was one of the callers that called in. It was actually Bud from St. James. He called in, and then Chris called in, and we started talking about this Jericho pizza that they have, named after WWE wrestler Chris Jericho. And I mentioned on air, why don't you bring us one of those pizzas? And they ended up, 45 minutes, an hour later, bringing us a pizza. So, Rick, myself, Sean Asor, Chris Curry, we were able to enjoy a nice Chris Jericho pizza, which, by the way, is pepperoni and ground beef. Delicious. I recommend it to anybody. It was great.
It's people bringing you food off the street now is really what what this is.
Instead of having to beg people to give me their food on the street,
Drew, hanging out outside,
now people are bringing
me hanging around dumpsters, they're now just actually bringing the food to the dumpster.
You'd be surprised, Drew. You can find some good stuff in the dumpster.
I bet you. I'm sure that you are certainly able to do that. What did the Moose do last night, Dave, in San Diego?
The Moose lost 3-2. Okay. Dan DeSalvo, though, signed a PTO Thursday. Dan DeSalvo was an interesting character. He had 14 points in 17 games last year with the Moose. He got a call from Washington to go to their camp and then didn't get an AHL contract. So went back to Tulsa to play in the ECHL, which is the Moose's ECHL affiliate.
Yeah.
It was off to a good start in Tulsa. The Moose signed Dan Murphy to a PTO. And I actually thought, not Dan Murphy. Darcy Murphy. Dylan Murphy, anyways, Murphy to a PTO, and I actually thought Dan DeSalvo would get the call, but he didn't. And then they signed him just on Thursday after releasing Yuri Franck, which was a little confusing because Yuri Franck on November 6th talked about playing in the AHL, and then he got released from his contract. Now, unfortunately, the team left before there was an opportunity to have a conversation with them as to why. But I'm a little bit, I was a little surprised because Franck was having some success in Tulsa. He had been sent down. He had 4 goals in 4 games. But although 3 of those goals were in 1 game, he had a hat trick. And and then they brought him back up. He played 1 game and then he got cut. So I guess they didn't see him as having a meaningful role on this team. And they brought in one of Ezzy's boys, Kale Cassie, considering Ezzy was wearing the Kale shirt last week.
Yes.
But and he didn't play last night, and so that they lost last night, as I said, and it was a end of a 4-game winning streak. They go back at it tonight in a rematch with San Diego, and I guess Andre Pavlik will likely get the start because Coach Vincent has shown a propensity for going with the rotation, so that most likely will be your starter.
And Comrie was in that last night?
Comrie was in that last night, and then they have 3 more games after this. I think they have 2 more in California, then 1 in Tucson, and then they're back home for a couple games next
Worth
week.
Noting about the Tulsa Oilers, Jamie Phillips just suffered his first defeat for the Tulsa Oilers.
10-1.
He was 10-1
yeah.
prior to that loss for the Tulsa Oilers, the Jets ECHL team. So the Jets goaltending pipeline is certainly deep and stacked with some impressive talent.
Now, Kale Cassie, former Medicine Hat Tiger, just a little, stat or, tidbit of information. From Shaunavon, Saskatchewan, the same hometown as former Calgary Flames defenseman Rhett Warner, who played with Mike Commodore in Calgary.
And also, just to clarify, it was Darcy Murphy. There we go. I had a little bit
Dylan
of
Murphy, ground. Somebody else altogether.
Dylan Murphy's from Seinfeld.
I thought so. I was a little bit concerned as to why you were... Anyways,
Murphy and O'Brien.
Yeah, Murphy and O'Brien from that legendary Seinfeld episode. That's it for this Saturday morning and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. A big thank you to the guests on today's program. Mike Commodore, former NHLer, John Rosen covers the LA Kings. Scott Powers covers the Chicago Blackhawks and Dan Rosen of NHL.com. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes and on TSN1290.ca and on our website. Big thanks to Rory behind the board doing a great job. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.